How Russia attempts to create racial discord in the U.S. and tech companies try to keep up.
Those who have the ability to do oversight are always a step behind.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. Representatives from Facebook, Google, and Twitter are testifying before Congress this week about propaganda and misinformation on their networks. We've talked about how the propaganda was aimed at creating division and unrest, especially around race. Facebook's general counsel said on Tuesday, that's still happening. Fake accounts on the site have encouraged violence against Black Lives Matter protesters, and one account called Blacktivist suggested violence and protests against police. Carsonia Wise Whitehead is an associate professor of communication and African American studies at Loyola University. Carsonia, these accounts that were trying to exacerbate racial tensions, do you think that's what they were doing? And if so, did it work?
I think that is the case. I mean, we're at a moment in time when racial tensions have been heightened for the past year. And I think that anything you add in to stir up the pot, to keep people upset, to further divide people is going to be pretty successful at this moment in time.
And do you think that we're at a time of heightened tensions because of strategies like this and propaganda like this? Or do you think we were already there and social media made it worse?
I think that this notion of the rising feeling around racial tension has been building for a while. I would argue that it goes back to after the first election of Barack Obama, when we begin to claim that we were a post-racial nation. And by stating that we were post-racial, we kind of put out the idea that maybe we might have been pre-racial, and we've never been pre-racial in this country. And so then there was this politeness around talking about race. It did not change hearts and minds. It changed the public discourse around race. And that has been steadily building. There's been a push against this polite discourse around race after the second election of Barack Obama. And you felt that there was a changing in an atmosphere, that people didn't want to be polite. People were getting very upset. People were getting very impatient with this notion of having to be racially sensitive and racially tolerant. And with the election of Donald Trump, that moment that the New York Times called, you know, this white lash moment, we saw that whatever strides we thought we had taken around race were quickly dismantled, quickly removed.
And then when you look at these sort of deliberate division campaigns on social media, you know, some of these fake accounts were pro-gun and some masqueraded as even black rights groups. Do you think that the strategy around racial tension was deliberate? Does that speak to some understanding that that would be a particularly effective way to sow division?
I think so. I think that we have some key moments in our historical memory that caused people to become very emotional. Very divisive moments. If you're talking about abortion, if you're talking about your political candidate, and if you're talking about race, race is that trigger point that people have very strong feelings about. I think race is something that we struggle with in this country, and that anything that's dropped into that discussion that's meant to divide is going to be very successful.
And then what about trust in social media? You know, one of the fake accounts that's used as such a big example was essentially sort of a Black Lives Matter account that was not real, but had more followers than the actual Black Lives Matter page. Like, how does it affect trust when you think that you're gathering in this online community with people that you want to talk to and then you find out they're not real?
I think that's why this campaign was so successful, because you saw that people were willing to believe that this was an actual source without doing the extra work. It is heavy lifting to begin to investigate these sources that you look to give you the news. You have to find out who is behind this website and what is their actual motive here.
Do you think that the tech companies have a responsibility to help shoulder some of that heavy lifting?
I would like to think that the tech companies would be more responsible. I think that in the World Wide Web, those who have the ability to do oversight are always a step behind. By the time there's an image on Twitter that needs to be removed, it's already been retweeted multiple times. But I think that we as citizens actively engaging in this medium and figuring it out as we go along, we must shoulder some of the weight, some of the responsibility, and then ultimately some of the blame.
So now this week we're having hearings. Some people are talking about regulation for these companies. What do you think comes next?
One of the things that really struck me is I asked my students to consider that if Russia has access, who else has access to not just our information, but to the discussions that we're having that are raging across our country. The ways in which they were involved in the last presidential election gives us cause for concern, but it's been almost a year, and we're now really trying to unravel what has happened. The next time we have this situation, will it take this long before we, A, figure out what happened, B, trying to understand the impact of it, and C, trying to put something in place to make sure it doesn't happen again? I don't know if the world of technology can move that quickly because social media is so large and it is hard to manipulate when there are no clear boundaries about where it begins and where it ends.
That's Carsonia Wise Whitehead from Loyola University. Now, today is the second day of hearings for the tech companies. In its testimony on Tuesday, Facebook said it was using artificial intelligence to try to weed out propaganda on its network, but acknowledged that the tech is indeed often playing catch up. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.